From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, with the end of session near, a survey of New Yorkers finds voters want action. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, will share his thoughts on whether there will be any major agreements before the session ends. And we'll have part two from the Innovation Trails look at natural gas drilling bans. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. State lawmakers are due to end the 2012 legislative session in just about a week and a half. While Governor Cuomo and legislative leaders are downplaying any hope of major agreements on some key issues, a survey of New Yorkers finds that voters want action. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
Lawmakers plan on leaving for the summer on June 21st, but they continue to be gridlocked on the issues of raising the state's minimum wage from $7.25 an hour to $8.50 an hour and offering tax breaks to small businesses as an incentive to create more jobs. Assembly Democrats, led by Speaker Sheldon Silver, have already approved a minimum wage increase bill, while Senate Republicans, led by Senator Dean Skelos, have approved the business tax cuts. Steve Greenberg was Siena College Research Institute says a poll of New Yorkers find that the majority like both proposals.
There is overwhelming support for increasing the minimum wage in New York. There is overwhelming support for Senator Skelos' proposed package of business tax cuts and credits.
Greenberg says if legislators follow a time-honored tradition, it's possible that voters will get both.
There is a deal to be had here if the two sides want to make a deal, because both issues, which the other House opposes the other guy's proposal, but both of these proposals are strongly, overwhelmingly supported by the voters of this state.
Governor Cuomo, though, has repeatedly thrown cold water on any such deal, saying the philosophical differences between the two houses are too great.
I'm not overly optimistic that we are going to bridge that philosophical divide in the time that we have left this session.
Cuomo has even said that achieving agreement between the two houses on raising the minimum wage is more difficult than winning the deal to legalize same-sex marriage last year. The government reform group Citizen Action offers a theory on why the minimum wage increase seems to be stuck. The group's Karen Scharf says a search through campaign contribution records finds opponents of the measure gave $400,000 to state Senate campaigns, and 71% of that money went to GOP candidates' coffers.
It's business as usual in Albany that CEO campaign contributions decide what's on the table and off the table. We think that this year we're seeing the effects of it even worse as we're getting closer to an election, and as we're getting closer to an election where the Senate Republicans are eager to maintain their majority, they seem to be possibly more influenced than even before by what their campaign donors want.
Governor Cuomo had listed the public financing of campaigns as one of his goals for the 2012 session, but the governor has been steadily backing away from that issue and other campaign finance reform measures. Citizen Action is pushing it, but Scharf admits it will be difficult to achieve.
Clearly, it's a heavy lift. The Senate has declared it dead on arrival, as they did with minimum wage. With only 8 days left, it's going to be tough, but we're going to keep pushing hard. And if it doesn't pass, we're certainly going to take it to the public for the fall.
The effort to pass public financing of campaigns Albanians comes as a study by the New York Public Interest Research Group finds more evidence of Albany's pay-to-play culture. The study finds that lobby firms contributed 70,000 times as much money per capita as the average New York State resident, and that the practice of bundling boosts the influence to an even greater level. Bundling occurs when lobbyists encourage their clients to also make contributions. They are then delivered as a package to the politician's campaign fund. The report finds that Governor Andrew Cuomo's campaign committee received the most money from lobbyists, nearly $500,000. Second was Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, whose campaign fund got around $150,000. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, our Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt this week did a story about the end of session and that there's this poll that shows New Yorkers want things accomplished. We have minimum wage on the table, among other things. Do you think there are going to be major agreements before the end of the session?
Well, in order to understand what's happening here, you have to understand the state Senate. The state Senate is a very important component in this. As you know, David and everybody else, the state Senate is run by one or two Republican votes. If you have an Obama election, and a recent Siena poll, I guess, out this week, shows 24 points for Obama, that's a landslide, landslide, landslide. When you get something like that in New York State, then what's going to happen is you're going to have a lot of people voting who are non-traditional voters. We know that Democrats vote in much fewer numbers than Republicans do. And so if Obama runs, and if it's seen as a close election, you're going to get a lot of people coming out and voting. That could change the state Senate. Into all of this comes Governor Cuomo, who, in fact, clearly wants the Republicans in power. That way, he doesn't have to argue with a bunch of progressive Democrats about things like, you know, a wage hike and things. He'll just say, I'm for it, but they're not, and I can't really deal with them. And we know what kind of rank hypocrisy, you know, all of that is, because the Republicans are so into Cuomo that whatever he wants, he could get from them. So that's what I'm seeing here. The Republicans lose in New York. The progressive Democrats will come in, and then you're going to see something very interesting. You know, there are four independent Democrats who say they don't like the way the other Democrats in the state Senate have behaved. And they've been sort of bought off by the Republicans. They've been given chairmanships, and which is very untraditional in New York. So if the Democrats win by a couple of votes in the state Senate, it'll be fascinating to see whether or not these four Democrats, obviously some people call them rogue Democrats, go along with the Republicans and vote to organize with the Republicans, which, of course, you're going to want to see Andrew Cuomo doing. Now, one of the things that's going on in both houses of the legislature is they pick some subject like marijuana reform, which I think should happen. And then the Republicans in the Senate say, no, no, we don't like it. Yeah, I'd like to know how many of them have not had a little weed in their life, and they ought to be turned into the hypocrisy police. But of course, you know, when you're smoking pot on the 16th floor, and by the way, I swear to you, I never have, but on the 16th floor on Park Avenue, nobody's going to get you. But if you're smoking pot on Lenox Avenue and 100 and something street, let me tell you, they'll come stop and frisk, they'll take you, and you're in the system, in this huge penal system that we have in New York State, which is just disgraceful. So while pot may be a entry drug, as they say, it'll be an easy vote for the certainly the Assembly Democrats, and probably you could get enough in the Senate. And probably the governor will go along. In the meantime, he's coming out looking for hydrofracking, which we knew, and I've said all along on these microphones he would do. Now it looks like it's official. The New York Times is reporting. And, you know, what about that little girl who has to have some benzene in her water? Is it right or wrong? But Cuomo, of course, will be running for president in 2016. And he'd like to be able to say, I solved the energy problems of New York State, and I can do that for the whole country also. You know, there's nothing really surprising here, except does anybody ever look in the mirror?
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Land trusts will soon be able to purchase insurance aimed at assisting enforcement of easements. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
A land trust is a nonprofit organization that, as all or part of its mission, actively works to conserve land by undertaking or assisting in land or conservation easement acquisition or by its stewardship of such land or easements. The Land Trust Alliance out of Washington, D.C. claims there are 1,700 land trusts that have more than 100,000 volunteers and 5 million members nationwide. With easements come promises of protection in perpetuity. Lucy Hayden is the executive director of Winnicke Land Trust in Rhinebeck, which counts approximately 350 easements. She points out that conservation easements held by Winnicke on private lands are voluntary agreements made with willing landowners. The land trust has, to date, avoided any court issues involving violations of those easements.
It can be very expensive to get into a courtroom situation with a landowner. You have to have a lot of money in the bank, basically, if you don't have an insurance plan in place. The Terra Firma Insurance Program is actually going to be a partnership of all the land trusts. It's co-owned by all the participating land trusts.
Hayden says Winnicke protects 2,500 acres throughout Dutchess County.
We pride ourselves on maintaining a very positive relationship with our easement landowners. Nevertheless, you recognize that there are risks. Sometimes a landowner can do something without realizing that they're actually not permitted under the easement to do that. And in many cases, we're in a position where we can help them to either reverse what they've done or help them to clear something up. And that's the approach that we typically take.
Leslie Ratley Beach is the Conservation Defense Director for the Montpelier, Vermont office of Land Trust Alliance and has worked tirelessly for years to enable land trusts to be able to secure insurance policies. She explains the process.
They pay an annual premium for each property that they have a conservation easement on. The conservation easement is like a deed, and it gives certain rights to the land trust and restricts the uses that the private owner of the land can make of their property. And it also covers land that land trusts may own themselves. So many land trusts have nature preserves, for example, and it would also protect them. So they'd pay a premium for each of those every year. And then if there was a problem where someone, unfortunately challenged the restrictions or trespassed, our land trusts have a lot of trouble with trespass on their lands, then the insurance pays for the lawyers and experts and surveyors and foresters, whatever experts are needed.
Ratley Beach says the insurance idea has been around for 3 decades, and she's glad to see it come to fruition. The policies are expected to be available soon through Terra Firma, formed by the Land Trust Alliance in 2011 to help land trusts defend their conserved lands from legal challenge. The hope is the program will be fully operational within 6 months.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
New York's congressional delegation is supporting a bid by North Country economic development interests to gain federal funding to help regional manufacturers. We get that story from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The Plattsburgh North Country Chamber of Commerce has partnered with SciTech in an application to obtain federal funds from the Rural Jobs and Innovation Accelerator Challenge. The goal is to determine where there are gaps in the supply chain to regional manufacturers. Plattsburgh North Country Chamber Vice President for Economic Development Susan Matten says if they are awarded the funds, they hope to keep companies in the area and make them more competitive.
Companies here have difficulty sometimes in competing because of the logistics that are involved with getting services and supplies and the parts and raw materials that they need to make whatever it is that they make. They are a little off the beaten path from some of the major trade routes, although we're right on 87, and that's great. What we would like to do is have more of those services and products available here in the North Country so that they could reduce their cost of making their products, and then they would be more competitive. Our hope is that they will be able to sell more of whatever it is that they make, and then be able to create more jobs here in the North Country.
SciTech is a nonprofit consulting firm that works with small and medium-sized manufacturers in the 7 northern New York counties. Executive Director Bill Murray says the federal grant would support the region's advanced manufacturing cluster in 3 ways.
What it provides and what we're proposing to support and provide is in 3 areas. And one is supply chain. Analyze their supply chains and be able to make them more efficient, to bring their suppliers closer to them, as well as find suppliers that are already here and link them together. That's the first piece of it. The second piece is growth and innovation, to provide consulting and training to help these companies create new ideas, create new products to grow their businesses. And third, and probably the most important, is workforce development. Getting access to the right skills training that advanced manufacturing employees need. A lot of it isn't available up here, so we need to bring it to them somehow. So that's the 3-pronged approach to support.
Congressman Bill Owens and New York Senators Charles Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand have written to the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Economic Development Administration, which underwrites the Accelerator program, urging that the application from the Chamber and SciTech be supported with federal funding. Congressman Owens says it represents an opportunity to take advantage of supply chain opportunities across the North Country.
Clearly, we have a situation in our district that is very favorable and has been taken advantage of to a great extent, particularly as we move goods back and forth between the United States and Canada. This is going to enhance that and increase the opportunities to take advantage. When you talk about supply chain, what you really mean is the movement of people and goods, primarily goods in this case. When you look at 87 and 81 on the western side of the district, you understand what great opportunity it creates for supply chain activities. Plattsburgh State has a supply chain major, and that's just a real opportunity for the area to blend all of these things together so that we make sure we are a hub for supply chain management and activities.
The application requests 3 years of funding to map and define current supply chains and then fill in the gaps.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. About 100 towns in New York State have passed laws that ban gas drilling. Most of the bans are temporary. About 20 are permanent. In part 2 of a series about the pair of Ithaca lawyers who laid the legal groundwork for these bans, the Innovation Trail's Matt Richman reports on the widespread opposition they face.
Helen and David Slache started working with the town of Ulysses in early 2011. It was the first place they helped write a natural gas drilling ban. The small Tompkins County town borders Ithaca. Town Supervisor Roxanne Marino says the drilling ban was met with almost no opposition.
We had citizens come to every meeting, but we never had any citizens at any meeting speak against it. The citizens who came mostly were really for us, acting and acting fast on something, because people had a lot of anxiety.
Town officials in Ulysses shared their research with the nearby town of Dryden, which soon passed its own ban. Dryden's law led to a lawsuit from a natural gas company with leases there. As the bans moved from Tompkins County to other counties across the state, the Slotches followed. They spoke at town board meetings when invited, and soon, wherever the lawyers went, proponents of gas drilling went there too. Tom Shepstone is the Marcellus campaign director for the industry-funded website Energy in Depth. He criticizes the Slotches for saying they are working pro bono when their nonprofit Community Environmental Defense Council receives grant money.
Suppose that we marched into a community and we said, we're going to help you write a law that provides for natural gas drilling throughout your community without restriction and so on and so forth, and we're gonna advise you, and we're going to do it on a pro bono basis. Everybody would look at us and say, what? Are you kidding?
Shepstone says he is open about the fact that he works for land developers, in this case gas companies. And he says the Slotches should be more open about the money they're receiving, too. The couple received $50,000 a year in 2010 and 2011 from the Park Foundation. The foundation's executive director, John Jensen, says the Slotches were already doing the work before receiving any money from Park.
We heard about them in the community. We heard they were out there doing good work to assist municipalities with addressing the hydrofracking issues.
The Slotches say they would keep doing the work whether or not they received the money. That's not enough of an explanation for Shepstone. He says the Slotches aren't just helping towns prepare for the gas industry. They're working for a group intent on keeping hydrofracking out of New York. Shepstone says officials should be listening to their town attorneys, not the Slotches, when considering new laws.
But in this case, what they're doing is, we see in many communities, is they're coming in and essentially substituting for the local attorney. The local attorney is relegated to the background.
Landowners and people from Shepstone's organization go to many of the meetings where the Slotches speak. They film the talks and write rebuttals. All this opposition hasn't caused the Slotches to seek a lower profile. In fact, says Helen Slotche, it's kept her going.
These days, I feel like I have not done my job if I'm like, they haven't attacked us at least a couple times each week. Like, so I must be doing something wrong.
So you're enjoying the fight a bit?
Yeah, like it's perverse, but it's probably, again, why I'm a lawyer. I don't mind fighting, and I really like to win.
Slotche is convinced they are winning, that the courts will uphold the bans. But not everyone is so sure. Scott Krakowski is the lawyer for the Joint Landowners Coalition of New York and represents a Middlefield landowner suing over that town's drilling ban.
You know, I have some serious concerns about what David and Helen Slotche are doing. They, in many cases, are trying to convince towns that this is fine.
Krakowski thinks the bans will eventually be overturned on appeal. And if not, he says there will be lawsuits against towns over whether they can stop residents from selling mineral rights without compensation.
And so I'm not sure the towns understand what the Slotches are getting them into.
Krakowski says these small towns could stand to lose millions in legal fees and landowner compensation. It will be a while until this is all sorted out by the courts. And in the meantime, the Slotches and their opponents keep traveling around the state, visiting towns, and offering clashing legal arguments on what to do about hydrofracking.
That was the Innovation Trail's Matt Richmond reporting. Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1224. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.